Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. An historic day, the day that the 46th President of the United States of America will be inaugurated. Joe Biden. I suppose never in the history of the world have there been more eyes on a new president than on this one. He has a big job to do. Herculean, I heard somebody say. And of course, there's a strong Irish connection. Did you know that 22 of the American presidents over the years have had strong Irish connections? But which president has the strongest? That's the question we're going to ask today. And Dr. Kieran Riley will be telling us. Some people say JFK. Is it Joe Biden? I just did a bit of cursory research and it looks to me that it's very close. It's very close because an awful lot of Irish people left Ireland around the time of the famine. And of course, they're the ancestors of Joe Biden and JFK. So it's close. Anyway, Dr. Kieran Riley may have the definitive answer to the question, who is the most Irish American president? 60 years ago today, JFK was inaugurated. And you heard that lady on Liveline quote from his speech, from his inauguration speech. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And that was the famous line from that. And of course, people are wondering, will Joe Biden use any Irish quotes, quotes from Irish literature? And the bad news is that they're all gone. They've all been used. Leo Varadkar, Micheál Martin, they're all gone now. But he sort of paraphrased Joyce last night. When I die, Delaware will be written on my heart. Joyce said, when I die, Dublin will be written on my heart. And so that's that. So, and I've been reading loads of stuff this morning and there's hints that there will be strong Irish mentions in the inaugural speech. So that's coming up. Loretta Blewett is a cousin of President-elect, soon to be President, Joe Biden, and we'll be talking to her, we'll be talking to Kieran. Hazel Hartigan is a leader in her own right. She's an Operation Transformation leader. We'll be speaking to her. And another soup of the day after 4 o'clock. And of course, we have our quiz of today, which I'll get to straight away. Tell you about this. Yes, today, the 20th of January. And of course, in the future, when people are doing quizzes like this, there will be questions on the presidential inauguration. Today, questions we've cobbled together on the years in the past and the centuries and the decades. And we're looking for two people to come on and answer 5 questions each. The great prize, a 2-night stay in the Farnham Estate, spa and golf resort in County Cavan. It's on 1,300 acres of mature woodlands. And there's lakes as well. It's a beautiful place up there and a great prize. And you can find out more at farnhamestate.ie. And if you want to be one of our contestants on our quiz of today, you have to answer this very difficult question. Who has been sworn in as the American president today? 1850-715-900. That's 1850-715-900. Who's been sworn in as the American president today? And good luck with that. Emails overnight. Yeah, they're busy enough overnight with the emails. Elizabeth Hanlon was on and she says, I was wondering if you could put a call out for me on your radio show. I'm trying to establish if my dad and his brother might be Ireland's oldest living male twins. I've tried all the official routes I can think of, but to no avail. Although they've all responded and been very helpful in suggesting possible sources, it doesn't seem to be a statistic that anyone gathers or keeps. The lads, and that's in inverted commas, were born on the 13th of January, 1929. So we wish them a belated happy 92nd birthday. They were born in Tralee in County Kerry. And Elizabeth Hanlon is wondering if her dad and her uncle are Ireland's oldest living male twins after celebrating their 92nd birthday last week. So there you go. She's throwing down the twin gauntlet there. Can anybody top that? I think we had something similar to this last year. And maybe it was Elizabeth. Maybe it was female twins. Maybe it was identical twins. Anyway, we're throwing that out there. The oldest living male twins in Ireland, 92. So can anybody top that? Sean has been on. Sean Laffey from Cashel. And he's been listening in and he's been making soup. I met Claire Byrne on the corridor yesterday. She was on the way out. I was on the way in. Like the song, I stepped out, she stepped in, and I stepped out. And we were socially distanced and we were wearing masks before you ask. And she said, I'm making the soup, I'm making soup. And we exchanged a little bit of conversation about that. And I was saying, you know, that you make a pot of soup and you enjoy it maybe one day, second day, maybe third day, but nobody else in the house eats it. And she was saying, same in her house, she's making herself and the hubby eat it, but the kids won't eat it. So that's the problem with soup. Anyway, Sean has a different problem with his soup. He says, on Monday, I was in charge of the lockdown dinner to feed herself and the three boys, aged 16 to 26. So the 16-year-old, a 26-year-old, is one in the middle. I made chicken legs on a bed of mixed Mediterranean veggies. Look at you. One of the lads doesn't do veg, so I made him a separate dish of lemon chicken. At the end of the meal, there was loads of veg left over. I asked my boys to put it in a pot and we'd whiz it up the next day for lunch as soup. That's what you do. That's what they've all been saying. Just throw everything in a pot. Leave it there for half an hour or so. Add a bit of stock and Bob's your uncle. Soup's your lunch. Next day arrived. I whizzed up the soup and it looked okay until we tasted it. One of the lads had put the quartered lemons in the mix from the middle boy's lemon chicken. So it was lemon vegetable soup. And I can tell you, says Sean Laffey and Cashel, it's a hard thing to swallow. Of course, nobody owned up. It was hard to spot the guilty face through my closed, watery eyes. You'll know the next time to check. That's the thing that happens when at home regularly when you're making the fajitas as a Saturday evening treat, as we do in our house. Every family has the, you know, the tradition. Like back in the day, it was every day. You knew exactly what you were going to eat. That's the way it had to be. If there were nine children, you couldn't be deciding at 4 o'clock what you'd have for dinner. That'd just be chaos. So you knew on a certain day you'd have, you know, bacon and cabbage and potatoes. That was a Thursday. Anyway, fajitas in our house on a Saturday night, but you use the lemon, you throw it in, you're frying the whole thing up, the peppers and the onions and the chicken, and it's in that lovely, you know, smoked paprika and a bit of cumin, a bit of coriander, all there mixed up and lovely. And then, you see, they get battered, you see, they get battered, the pieces of lime, and they get coloured because of the dressing, the marinade. And then you throw it all into the wrap or the tortilla and you're biting down, the next thing, bump, you hit on a piece of lime, half-cooked lime, not pleasant. Could ruin a fajita dinner for you. So it could. One thing I meant to mention to you on Monday, if you're working from home and you have a traditional computer and not a laptop, here's a little bit of advice for you. Because I've been looking for a webcam. I bought one the first lockdown. It was cheap as chips and it's not great. So I was looking around to get a new webcam. And what I ended up on this website, and this guy suggested brilliantly, you don't spend any money at all, well, maybe on an app, €8, but use an old iPhone or an old smart phone as your webcam. And all you have to do is download EPOC Camera. That's, or it could be EPOC Camera, EPOCCAMERA, EPOC Camera. It's an app. And that will convert your old phone into a webcam. Just a bit of advice I thought I'd share with you today. I'm as proud of Heaney as any other Irish person, but my goodness, we do have other great poets, and I hope Joe Biden is a bit more original today in his speech and doesn't fall back on yet another Heaney quote, says Damien. Another quote from Kennedy's speech: those who try to ride the tiger usually end up inside it. Oh yeah, we forgot that quote during the boom times, says Kevin in Leitrim. We always had two choices for dinner. Oh, pretty posh. Take it or leave it. See, the punchline, take it or leave it. Now, my mum, who is a saint, would have made different options, just like Sean did, made the lemon chicken for the son who doesn't like the vegetables. My mum would have had a number of things on the go because there were a number of fussy eaters in our family. Well, one in particular, I won't name any names, Hugh. He was the fussy eater in our family. So oftentimes your mum would have to make the, you know, what everybody else was having, and then there'd be a special one for Huey. My problem is that I can't keep up with the soup. I made the spiced butternut squash and it's now a staple in the house. Great. Celeriac is the last one that I made over the weekend and I had it for lunch on 2 days. And that's, the rest of it's gone in the bin. Terrible waste of food. The dogs won't eat it. Tom won't eat it, Kate won't eat it, Jenny won't eat it, but it was delicious. It was delicious. And sort of a hazelnut and sage pesto on top. Absolutely delicious. We've a new one today. James Cavan is coming on after 4 o'clock to give us his soup of the day. So I'll be cooking again tonight. 51551 ray at rte.ie. I don't know if you know this, but Barry Gibb, one of the Bee Gees, has got together with a number of country stars, and he's gone through the Bee Gees songbook and he's done re-recordings of some of their greatest hits with people, duets. So he did a version of To Love Somebody with J.B. Buchanan, and I like it. I like it a lot. And here it is. Good afternoon. Barry Gabe and J.B. Buchanan from Greenfields, which is released around now. It had so many hits. How Deep Is Your Love? Oh, there's the man on the telly. I was turning him down there. He's on Sky. And they're showing all the various, you know, I'll have to turn him off there. Sorry about that. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I was just checking in there and he's going around the streets of Washington and it looks like a post-apocalyptic place. There's National Guard on the streets. There he is back. He won't go away. Hello. See you, mister. Thank you. So 5 and 5, 5, 1. Next time you have soup left over, freeze it. No bin. He won't go. That man won't go away. Sorry about that. It's very unprofessional. Turn on the telly during the song just to get a sense of the lead up to the inauguration. Is he gone? He's gone now. He's gone. 2 house rules for family meals. Stretch or starve, Suzanne. And I've homemade soup every day, but since I always make a big pot, I freeze portions in tubs for 1 or 2 servings. Ryan would be very thankful of that. All soups freeze well. Great for backup. Thanks for all the soup ideas so far. That's Lulu in St. Mullins, a beautiful part of the country, down there on the Carlow-Kilkenny border. My adopted mum had a clean out the fridge soup she used to make. Her oldest son was a finicky. Ah, there's a lovely word, a finicky eater, as opposed to a fussy eater. One of the same, I suppose. But on the day we had that soup, he ate every bite, although there were a lot of items in there that weren't on his eating list. Isn't that the key when you're parenting and you're feeding fussy or finicky eaters? You put it all in a soup or a sauce and you cod them. It's a new day in America. Joe Biden has just tweeted and they're saying that the theme for the speech will be Build Back Better. See, it's dangerous. They had the Make America Great Again and they're trying to come up with some other tagline. Build Back Better probably isn't it. It's sort of difficult to say. It doesn't. Build Back Better. It sounds like one of those tongue twisters that you did in elocution classes. Bernard should build back better and bounce. 5 on 5, 5 on RayRT.ie. Loretta Blewett after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I've organised it there. We have pictures there, but no sound, which is what you want when you're watching the telly and doing a radio programme at the same time. Today, a massive day for the United States of America, as I've been saying, as Joe Biden is due to be sworn in as the new president, the 46th president of the United States of America in the next hour or so. Biden's Irish connections are well known, and I'm joined on the line now by his cousin, Loretta Blewett. How are you doing, Loretta?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. How excited are you?
Very excited, but tinged with a little bit of sadness that I'm not in Washington.
Yes.
I'm watching them all filing into their seats now. And I'll tell you, I'd rather be over there rubbing shoulders with Barbara Bush and the crew than I would be here, or whatever that Bush lady's name is. I think it's Barbara, is it?
How close were you to going?
Very close. I did chat with them over and back last week, see if it was a possibility, but it really just wasn't, Ray. You know, with I suppose Joe's trying to keep numbers very much down with with COVID restrictions. First of all, he's trying to lead by example on that front. And then obviously, as you mentioned just a few minutes ago, I mean, it's more akin to Syria in Washington today.
Yes.
Than it is in America. So listen, I hope everything's goes smoothly and safely. And as much and all as I'd want to be there, I just hope everything will go okay today.
Yeah, I was listening to Steve Comey, the former head of the FBI, speaking to Claire Byrne this morning. Brilliant interview. And I was a bit worried when I heard him because he was saying he wants to get to the other side. You know, he's a little bit scared that something might happen today. You know, that.
Yeah.
Like he wants to get to the other side tomorrow when Joe Biden is in the White House and he's signing executive orders, because that'll mean that the whole thing today went peacefully.
Yeah, I feel a bit like that too. Just a little bit apprehensive, yeah. I suppose. You know, knowing that, I suppose you feel so proud of the fact that, you know somebody that's going to be the 46th president of the United States, but also you feel nervous because you know that person and you want everything to just go smoothly. So to be honest, I'd rather now it would be all over and everything goes okay, because I suppose they got such a fright last week. I think they dumped something like 10 or 12 of the National Guard out yesterday because they had done background checks and noticed that there were some links to right-wing agencies or whatever. So it just goes to show how serious they're taking it. Yeah. They were caught off guard last week. I don't think they'll be caught off guard this week. And I just hope that everything will run smoothly.
Isn't the contrast huge? It's like two different worlds. You know, the scenes from the 6th of January and the scenes from today in the exact same spot on Capitol Hill.
It's really is mental, like it's scary. And, you know, it's just we've seen scares and trouble in America before. But when you see it now and you know, who's connect, you know, who's associated with it all in terms of Joe Biden and the Biden family, you just are a little bit anxious and a little bit nervous for them. But, you know, it is sad, really, to see that that's the way how divisive America's got, unfortunately.
So your Knockmore is the homestead, is it?
Knockmore is the hub of activity here today in Runagroy, to be specific, on back at my dad and my brother and his wife and the kids and RTE are outside and I'm stuck in a bedroom here chatting to you. So there's a lot of activity, but it's nice. We're just in our own bubble. My other sisters are in their own houses in Kildare and Galway. My cousins are in theirs. So we haven't been able to gather together, obviously, for COVID reasons. And we are thinking of everybody that's sick in hospital at the minute. We know a few people and also people who have died from COVID over the last few weeks. So it is very tough on other people. And I know people are having a really difficult time this week and in previous weeks and in the next
few
weeks.
It's a tough time, isn't it, for everybody?
We are enjoying a little bit of fun here this evening or this afternoon. And it is nice to be able to celebrate something in such kind of dark days, I suppose.
Yeah, you're in a bubble. You had a busy day today. So who did you talk to? Did you talk to BBC?
I did. Do you know what? I was on the BBC yesterday, but it was a package I did a couple of weeks ago. I've been avoiding a few calls from London this afternoon. Right. But yes, I needed to focus on you, Ray. I was on with Holly and Philip Schofield earlier on this morning as well. Yeah, so it's been good fun. Yeah.
So the motorcade has just arrived outside Capitol Hill, and President-elect, your cousin Joe Biden, has just got out of his car there. There you go. I don't know what he's doing there. It looks like he's going to get something from the boot of the car. No.
he might be getting his accordion or something. He might have recorded a bit of Irish music, as he is Irish.
Yes. And you've been in touch with people connected in the camp, if you like. Have you been told to watch out for something Irish? Is that what you've been told?
Yes. So I spoke to his brother yesterday and he just told me not to miss a bit of the action. So if I miss anything, Ray, it's your fault. But I think I'll be safe enough. He told me sent me some shamrocks and said, watch out, don't miss anything. He said, stay close to the telly. It's going to be enjoyable. Okay. So I think there will be a good Irish theme through it. We know that Patricia's going to be playing the violin later from County Louth, and that'll be flying the flag for Louth. So we are very proud to see that happening as well. I met Patricia when I was out in the White House 4 years ago for the Medal of Freedom, and she played music then for Joe Biden as well. So so that's a lovely element. Okay. I see the chieftains, like myself, were unable to travel.
We were talking to Paddy Maloney.
We'll take the next flight together, hopefully.
Would you be really upset with me if I described what Jill and Kamala Harris were wearing? You would, wouldn't you?
Firstly,
I'll tell you that
me and all the women in Ireland want to hear this.
Hold on, Doug and Joe Biden are wearing long black coats, right, and grey suits. That's what the men are wearing. Jill, that's his wife's name. Jill,
yes.
Biden is wearing. I'm not very good with colours. Men aren't good with colours. I'm sorry about that. There's a generalisation, but it's a sort of it's a grey blue type of colour. I'm sure there's. Teal, they're shouting at me. It's teal. It's a teal coat with satin lapels. And it's buttoned just above the waist. And then Kamala Harris is wearing, what colour would you say that is? Royal blue, purpley colour. I've never heard that. Now, that's from a woman, Loretta.
You're lucky you've got some backup there, or it would have ended disastrously there.
That's Niamh Hassel there. I'll credit her, or sorry, blame her with those. But anyway, they're making their way up the steps of Capitol Hill. And again, the contrast of these images and the ones we saw last week is quite stark. Jill has a matching coloured mask. It doesn't seem that Kamala has a matching coloured mask. They'll be talking about that tomorrow. Both men are wearing black face masks. So there you go. This isn't like Henry VIII, and I said this to you last time, and I know like Henry VIII was related to Barack Obama, but it was very distant. But you know this man, you've been in his company for a bit of time, he has mentioned you, you know, this is a very strong connection.
Very strong, you know, and people are kind of, you know, laugh off the fact that his, you know, that we're third cousins, and they say, oh, that's, you know, that's ridiculous. It's so far down the line. But setting that aside for a while, like we're very, very close, as you said. He's a very, very kind human being, very nice and gentle and honest and sincere. And when I asked him in 2017, when he left office as vice president, would he come and turn the sod on the Mayo Hospice? He said to me, absolutely no problem, organised everything, paid for his own flights, his own accommodation, and came up to Mayo and spent a couple of days with me there, came and turned the sod in the Mayo Hospice. And, you know, I work in fundraising and, you know, gave his time free of me to, you know, meet some donors and all of the rest of it. So, listen, he didn't have to do that. He was not obliged to do that. And he did that out of his own kind heart, because obviously, you know, his son, Bo, died from cancer in 2015. It's widely known, but his Bo's name will forever be attached now to the Mayo Hospice. We have a nice plaque put down where Joe turned the sod on the spot. And it's just like, even when I was over there in February, just gone on his campaign trail, you know, he like straight away asking me about the hospice and is it built, and, you know, ask my mum died from cancer last Christmas. And, you know, when we were over there 4 years ago, myself and my brother, it was around this week actually, mum was very sick with cancer at the time, and you know, he brought me into his office in the West Wing, and he sat down while everyone was trying to pull him, drag him here, there and everywhere, and he wrote her a lovely little note. Wow. You know, to tell her he was thinking of her, and to keep the faith and to keep the spirits high, and that he would see her again that summer, and of course he did, and spent some time with her. Always just so kind and sincere, and knowing what she was going through, checking what treatment she was on, what stage she was at with it all, you know, how she was feeling, and just like genuine stuff, not, you know, not media attention, not looking for headlines.
Your description of him there, and how people have described the outgoing president, again, worlds apart. Do you think at some stage you will be in the White House? Will you be in the Oval Office, do you think?
I think so. I walked past it the last time I was there, and I couldn't go in because Barack Obama was inside with his security detail on the door. But I'm looking forward to getting into the Oval Office this time round. I do anticipate getting over there as soon as possible. Look, it may be that he'd be here before I get over to America. If he can come this year, I know he will. Some of his staff have told me that their priority, once things settle down in America and he gets settled into his role, that he will he'll be coming straight this way. So we look forward to that.
And his connection with Ireland is a real one as well, politically. Because there's a great piece there by Jim Sharkey in the Irish Times today. I don't know if you've read it. But he traces,
didn't get a chance yet,
he traces Joe Biden's connection, you know, and how he has been involved in things that are happening in Northern Ireland for quite some time now. He was part of the people who founded Friends of Ireland, a broad-based congressional body dedicated to peace in Northern Ireland. Back in the day. So, you know, there's very...
aware of all of that. You know, he talks to me privately and has several times about his involvement with the relations in Northern Ireland and how all that panned out. He took his parents over a few years back, obviously, before they passed away. They were with him in the North. And, you know, very much finger on the pulse in terms of what's going on in Ireland. As a very, you know, he had a great relationship with Enda Kenny when Enda was the Taoiseach. And also, it's always impressive when you hear somebody from America referring to him as the Taoiseach and not something else. He's able to say those words, you know. It's not false. It's not made up.
His granny would have spoken Irish to him.
Very much so. And I believe Marty Walsh is an Irish speaker, so Marty will be able to give him a bit of a crash course now.
Yeah, well, there was a great documentary about Marty Walsh on TG Carr a few years ago. So he's from his people are from a Gaeltacht area, which he used to regularly visit. So what's on the menu tonight then? Are you going to watch it now? You're watching it, but will there be food now, or are you going to, is there a celebratory meal, or what way is it going?
Well, Well, I'm not sure. I think we're going to go down the American theme route with some hot dogs and burgers and some pizzas later on. And we might even have a few beers. You'd never know, Ari. We'll see how we...
And are you dressing up for us, Loretta?
I'm dressed up, yes. Only because I have to go on the telly, though, I'll be honest. I'll probably be in my slippers otherwise.
So Pat McGrath's outside.
Pat McGrath's here, safe and sound. And he's outside. And we look forward to chatting to him in a little while.
And people who want to see what's happening, as in opposed to listen to it here, they can go on to RTE1. They're covering it. I think the coverage starts at 4 o'clock, or maybe it started already. It started already. And you'll be there as well. The Blewitts will be there. And just to mention as well that you are on the podcast, which is doing extremely well with Hector and Tommy. And we got an email, which I can't put my hand to now, from a big fan of yours called Kat, and she loves your laugh. Wait, let's see if I can put it before you. Oh, there it is there. Just heard you're going to have Loretta Blewitt on your show today, and I just wondered if you might tell her how much I personally enjoy her podcast with Tommy and Hector every week. She has the most infectious laugh, and sometimes I find myself laughing just because she's laughing. She provides a perfect balance for the two lads, and I can't wait until the three of them head to the White House to meet her cousin. It'll be pure class. So there you go. That's from Kat.
Oh, that's lovely. Thanks very much, Kat.
Okay.
I know we're having great fun doing the podcast and enjoying the crack so far. So good.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future, Loretta Blewitt. Enjoy the day.
Well, when I'm in the White House, I'll give you a call.
And we'll see you on 6-1. We'll see you on 6-1 News. Good luck. See
great
you.
Stuff.
Bye.
Thanks
bye.
So much, Ray.
Bye. That's Loretta Blewitt there, third cousin of President-elect Joe Biden.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, 51551, I'm very curious as to the age of the oldest driver in Ireland and wonder if you'd be so good to put it out to your listeners. My dad will be 96 in September of this year and is still driving. I know he's probably not the oldest, but must be close. I'd say he must be close, Ger. I'd say he must be very close. The oldest driver. So we're looking for the oldest twins. Elizabeth has been on to us. Her dad and her uncle celebrated their 92nd birthday on the 13th of January last week. And she's wondering if they're the oldest male twins, living male twins in Ireland. And now Ger wants to know who the oldest driver is in Ireland, because Ger could be a man or a woman. Anyway, the dad involved is 96 this September and still driving. My twin brother Paddy and I are the oldest twins, 71 in Ireland. However, My twin brother Paddy and I are not the oldest twins, 71 in Ireland. However, our mother, 94, she got the vaccine last week, is probably the oldest mother of twins. And also a great grandmother of twins. Her great grandsons are also twins. Did you get all that? That's from Jimmy. Thanks for that, Jimmy. Press that button there. Where is it? There you go.
Operation Transformation on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Healthy Ireland. Helping you keep well.
Yeah, and Operation Transformation continues tonight on RTE 1 after the news. And Nurse Hazel Hartigan joins us on the line, one of this year's leaders. How are you doing, Hazel?
I'm doing well, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you again.
You too.
Yeah. The last time we got cut off, there was all sorts of confusion. But
I know. Sure, people thought I hung up on you and everything, and I didn't. I wouldn't be that rude.
Yeah. Great to talk to you again. So it's 2 weeks into it. This is episode 3 tonight. How are you feeling about the whole thing?
Gosh, you know what? I'm actually ripped, to be perfectly honest with you. It's been a lot. I don't think I actually really understood how intense the whole thing can be when you're, working it into your own normal life stresses and work and stuff like that. But it's not, I don't regret doing this one bit. Like, this is going to help me and my family in the future. But yeah, it's been exhausting, to be honest.
Yeah, but there's a lot going on in your life, Hazel, and people will see it tonight. Yeah. You're a nurse. Now, you're not working, working with COVID patients. You're working in rehab.
No.
But still, you've all the stresses that are going with the health service at this time, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, like, COVID has a huge backlog effect on other services within the hospital and other services in the community. So we would have a lot of patients still with us, because they're waiting for home health carers to go back into place, because there's a lot of them out sick because COVID is in the community. Some people can't go home because their family have COVID. Other people are waiting, long-term placements, and nursing homes are quite wary about bringing in patients from hospitals at the moment because they're all waiting on the vaccine and they don't want to jeopardise the patients that they already have or their staff by bringing in somebody that might have it. And it's quite understandable, but it just makes it a difficult place to be in the health service at the moment, you know.
And we're hearing about surges and we're hearing about how long can they cope with the current, you know, wave. So all of that, you're working in that environment. And then you've Richard and you've Tommy and Grace at home. And then on top of that, you invited the whole Operation Transformation world into yours as well. So there is there's a lot going on in your world. And I think the thing from speaking to leaders over the years that they don't think about or they underestimate is the emotional drain on you.
Because you do a lot of thinking and a lot of soul searching while you're doing this. You're trying to figure out how you got into the position that you're in, that you needed Operation Transformation. And then you're trying to find ways, find a pathway to get yourself into a better part of your life, you know. So there's a lot of soul searching, which is emotionally and physically draining. And there is, you know, a lot of future planning that you have to do, you know, to put in tools, you know, that we're learning, that we're being given to help us, you know, forge a new pathway for ourselves to become healthier, fitter and lighter in weight and in body and soul, you know. So there's a lot going on in it.
And I'd imagine you can draw on the fact that you went back to education quite late in life, late in your life, not late in life. So you're only 18 months qualified as a nurse.
That's it. I just qualified in August of 2019. And then COVID came in February, March of 2020. We just about managed to get our graduation in January of last year. You kind of feel a little, but a little bit robbed maybe of the experience of being a nurse in normal times, you know. But, you know, it is what it is and you get on with it, you know.
But I think I said this to you the last time as well, but you know that if you put your mind to something, you can achieve it because you've done that with the nursing. I'm wondering about the soul searching. And you said there that you ask yourself how you got to a stage in your life where you needed, your word, not mine, you needed Operation Transformation. Yeah. And what sort of answers, I'm beginning to sound like Eddie now, what sort of answers did you come up with then?
I'll be honest with you, Ray, I'm still searching. You know, it's not something that I've actually found an answer to yet. I suppose a lot of my weight is due to the fact that I won't say I didn't care, but it's just that I was living life, you know, and I was going day by day, week by week, like everybody else. And my weight wasn't affecting my health as, you know, at that time. And like, as I say, I'm still searching for the answer to that. You know, there's a multitude of things that happened, you know.
That it's interesting you say that, you know, that your weight wasn't affecting your health. And did things that you learned doing your nursing degree, did that bring them in into sharp focus? Yes, it did.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you're sitting in a room and you've got 52 students in there and you're probably thinking like 40 of them probably are beautiful, lovely, slim girls and fine, healthy young lads, you know, and, you know, your lecturer is talking about the effects of obesity on the health service and how it affects the health service and how it affects people personally. And you know, it's nearly always like comorbidity with other diseases and that are out there, and you're kind of really just want to shrink into your seat because maybe there might be a few eyes on you or whatever, you know, you do feel it. Yeah. So it really brought to light to me while doing the nursing degree how bad obesity can actually affect your health and, you know, your risk for other health conditions as well.
Do you think that message is communicated well enough by, you know, the health service or the people who should be communicating that message?
I think they try their best, Ray, to be perfectly honest with you. I think a Healthy Ireland really have tried But I don't know. I think you have to be open to hearing it.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the issue. Like, you know, if you're not open to hearing it, you're not going to do anything about it. You're just going to think, gosh, look, it doesn't affect me. It affects somebody else. You know, that's not me. I'm happy with how I am. And if you don't like it, then jog on. You know, that kind of way.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think until it actually does affect a lot of people, that's when it hits home with them. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's too late at that stage.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, it's not, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been told I'm pre-diabetic, you know, so I need to cut the hell on, like, you know.
You're pre-diabetic, are you? Is that what you said?
Yeah, yes, yeah. Yeah, and I actually found that out through this process. You know, it's not something that
That can be reversed, can't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Through diet and exercise, that can be, yeah.
River. Yeah. You're doing your exercises in front of a lovely roaring fire there. Probably not the best.
That was never intentional. Now, I would come home from work and the lads would have the fire lit when I'd come home from work. And I don't have a huge big house. I don't have, like, you know, a gym off the end of the house or anything like that.
Who does? Very few people do.
The sitting room. It's either the sitting room or the kitchen that I'm exercising in. So right. The kitchen, the tiles are far too hard. Do you know?
Yeah.
My body is going through enough now without putting it through that as well. So it's in front of the fire, do you know? But sure, listen, I might have lost a few extra ounces because of it. Like, you know, you never know.
And they're all great. Like Grace, your 14-year-old, and Tommy, who's 20, is he? Tommy's 20. They're doing the exercises with you. And you did brilliantly the first week. You lost 8.5 pounds. And I can't give away what happens tonight, but people will tune in to watch that at 9:30. And everybody's sharing in the cooking duties as well.
Yeah, Richard and Tommy have been fantastic. Like, as Richard has said, like, you know, Tommy can cook as well as myself and Richard. Well, maybe not Richard, because Richard is a trained chef, like, but...
Is he? So he's a trained chef.
Yeah, he's a trained chef. He works in Milford Care Centre here in Limerick.
Uh-huh.
So the hospice. So yeah, so he's a frontline worker as well. So as I said, Richard and Tommy are both helping with the cooking. Grace isn't fond of standing in front of a stove unless she's cooking noodles or something like that. Right. But she'll get there eventually. Yeah. You know, but,
she's only 14. She's only 14.
And she's great to help out with the exercises. She had her lunch break yesterday now from her online schooling, and she did her exercises with me, or did my exercises with me, sorry. And then when it was time to go back, she went back and did her schoolwork, you know. So she didn't have to do that. And, you know, I really appreciate the fact that she did, you know.
Now, people will see you tonight, and, you know, the stress and the tiredness and all that comes to the fore tonight, so people can tune in at 9:30 and they'll see what's prescribed for you by Dr. Sumi and by Carol Henry and the rest of them. Yeah. Great talking to you, Hazel. Mind yourself, and you're doing you're doing brilliantly, and it's a pity we can't, you know, actually, you know, you can't come into studio and we can't see each other, but anyway, that's the world we live in. At 9:30, Operation Transformation, and we say thanks again to one of this year's leaders, Hazel Hartigan. Thanks, Hazel.
Operation Transformation on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Healthy Ireland, helping you keep well.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, so the Clintons have arrived and the Obamas have just arrived there, and Michelle Obama wearing trousers. She's wearing trousers, a long flowing coat and matching trousers and top. And they look very much the power couple, do the Obamas there. So that's ongoing there, and you can watch it over on the telly if you can. If you're in your car, you can't, obviously. My neighbour in Blackrock is 96 and still driving, just renewed his licence, and his friend is approaching 99 and he's also driving. So the person who was wondering if their dad, 96, was the oldest driver in Ireland, the answer is no. I know a man who'll be 101 in April and he's still driving, and not a bother on him, says Anna. So 101. Driver 101 is getting the prize there. Now, we started asking the question today in the office, who is the most Irish of American presidents? And we did a bit of research and we landed on Dr. Kieran Riley from Maynooth University, and Kieran is on the line now. How are you doing, Kieran?
Good afternoon, Ray. How are things?
Thanks for taking our call. So you have done research on the famine, and most of the people who were ancestors of American presidents left Ireland during the famine. Is that it?
Well, an awful lot of them, yeah.
Yeah,
there's,
yeah.
There's been a good few of them at this stage, yeah.
Yeah. So that means that it's very close when it comes to who is the most Irish, is it? Or how do we establish it?
Well, it's, I suppose it's difficult to ascertain who's the most Irish. I suppose technically speaking, at this stage, it probably would be JFK. You know, he has ancestors in the Kennedys and Dungannstown and Wexford and the Fitzgeralds and Bruff in County Limerick. And there's also connections to County Cavan and County Cork. But I suppose Joe Biden has an almost similar background, identical background, you could say, in that his family, both the Blewitts and the Finnegans, were part of the mass exodus of people that left Ireland 170 years ago during the famine. You know, so they're very similar backgrounds.
Mm. And both men would have been very aware of their Irish heritage and probably would have known the people who came originally from Ireland, would they?
Yes. Well, JFK, of course, you know, was very aware of his Irish background and actually visited Dungannstown and Wexford before he became president in 1960. And similarly, Joe Biden, you know, is very aware, and we've seen only yesterday, you know, he's constantly quoting Irish literature and history, but he's very aware of his Irish ancestry. And I think it's part of the reason for that was that the Blewitt family, when they settled in Scranton in Pennsylvania, they settled around a very large contingent of people from County Mayo who had left during the famine years as well. So neighbours, friends and family would have settled close to them. And the Blewitts, for several generations afterwards, you know, these are Joe Biden's great-grandfather and great-grandfather, they would have been integral members of Irish associations in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
So they would have kept in close contact with what was happening in Ireland.
So there was a strong connection to the Irish community, and then there was the public service part of it as well.
Absolutely. Almost at once they arrived in Scranton in Pennsylvania, Edward Blewitt and his son Patrick Blewitt become, you know, they're part of the public officialdom. They're engineers mapping out the land and the railways in that part of America. And then Edward Blewitt, the son of Patrick Blewitt, becomes a senator. So he was the grandfather of Joe Biden.
Uh-huh. And before they even left Ireland, the Blewitts were sort of doing community service, if you like. They were helping others.
Yes, Joe Biden's great-great-grandfather, Edward Blewitt, he played a pivotal role in famine relief in Mayo in the Ballina area during the late 1840s. He was an overseer of the public works schemes. Now, I know there's two ways to look on the public works schemes which were implemented during the famine. People did die on those schemes because of malnourishment and so forth, that they physically couldn't work. But the other way to look at them is that people survived, you know, and we're, I suppose, in one sense, we're all survivors of the famine because of the charitable works of others and public relief schemes like this. And Edward Blewitt oversaw a massive scheme in Mayo to put people to work and to keep them from starvation.
And was that the building of roads primarily?
Yes, primarily the building of roads, bridges and drainage. Drainage in a big way, trying to make land more profitable and to encourage people to, I suppose, grow alternative crops and to move away from the dependence of the potato.
So in a real way, the people of Mayo are still enjoying the work of Joe Biden's ancestry when they drive on certain roads.
Absolutely. The landscape, you know, the landscape of not just Mayo, but the whole country was changed by these works.
Yeah. And then the Kennedys and the Fitzgeralds, were they as involved in community? And when they moved to the States, were they involved in Irish organisations?
Not at first. They would have had to work, I suppose, from the Kennedys and the Fitzgeralds left, you know, with very little during the famine, and they would have had to work their way up. And it took a generation or two to work their way up. They began as coopers and general labourers in the Boston area. So they had a slightly slower start, but in one sense got there quicker. You know, within 110 years of Patrick Kennedy leaving Dungannstown, on this day 60 years ago, JFK was being inaugurated. So it was a quick step up.
Yeah, when you say it like that, it was meteoric, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah. And I think it sets him out and sets him apart for that reason.
Yeah. Now, you met Joe Biden when he was here turning the sod, was it, on the hospice that Larita mentioned?
That's right. He paid a visit in 2016, and I was asked to meet him and to brief him on the role of his ancestor, Edward Blewett. Now, it was a story that he wasn't familiar with, but one which he took great pride in hearing. I met him. He insisted that moment where he visited the home place or the site of the former home place on Garden Street in Ballina, that it would be kept away from the media, that he didn't want the media present for that. It was uh-huh. a personal moment for him and his family. But it was a lovely moment to share that information with him and to tell him about the role of Edward Blewett.
So the homestead is in Ballina, is it?
Yes, he was brought to a house where the Blewetts had lived for a period in Ballina. Right. Yeah.
Ah, and Knockmore is just where the Blewetts live now?
I think so, Marita will tell us more about that.
Okay. So you have a strong connection now. You're the man who told him about his great-great-great-grandfather, Edward Blewett. You must feel a sense of pride now, do you, today?
Yeah, it's a lovely moment. It was a lovely moment in 2016, and it's nice to be, I suppose, to be associated with the history that we're seeing unfolding before our eyes this afternoon, and it's great that he has done that.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Ciarán Riley from Maynooth University, thanks so much for talking to us today. So I think from that conversation, the Kennedy, JFK, was the most Irish president, and Joe Biden is a very close second. And he is the man of the moment. And they're showing shots there on RTE and Sky and everything. Of all the people, all the men are wearing exactly the same. It's long black coats. So when people give out about the fact that what women wear is discussed and not what men wear is discussed, it's just that men are pretty boring when it comes to these occasions. Black Crombies, three button front, like everybody, even the teenagers are wearing them. And it's encouraging to see that everybody is sort of employing social distancing and everybody's wearing masks. And I think that's Joe Biden's children arriving now and being hugged by Michelle Obama. So it's getting close to the business end of this ceremony. And Anish, we have to go to... We have noticed no patterns on the clothes they're wearing. That's an observation from Niamh outside, men and women. Anish Tosha now in the Freescale and Oaktail, Cort to Wallish. Guramaga Cort, 5 on 5, 5 on RedRT.ie. Pretty please, can anyone tell me where can I buy anti-glare glasses for computer screens? Are they glasses you wear when you're looking at a computer? I've never heard of those before. Somebody might fill me in on that. So one of our listeners is looking for anti-glare glasses for computer screens, or maybe it's one of those things that you put affixed to the front of your computer. Is that one of those things? Anyway, somebody will put me right on that. 5 on 5, 5 1. Thank you very much. Time for our quiz of today. This week, a great prize. Two nights stay in a stylish guest room with breakfast each morning and dinner for two in Maxwell's Grill Room at Farnham Estate in Cavan. 1,300 acres of mature woodlands and lakes to explore. And there's a spa and there's a golf resort as well. And you can find out more at farnhamestate.ie. On the line from the Kilkenny Waterford border is Frances Dunphy. How are you doing, Frances?
Good, thanks, Ray.
And so which side of the border are you on, Frances?
Oh, on the Kilkenny side.
Aha. Is there a name to the place you live in?
Yeah, it's Mounkine, Carrigeen, Mounkine.
Oh, I know Mounkine, yeah. Mounkine, yeah. Yeah, so you're very close to Waterford there.
Yes, we are. Yeah. About 5 or 6 kilometres, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And that's nice to be close to, like, the city, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And yet we're in the middle of the country.
Yeah, it's lovely. You've the best of both worlds there.
Exactly.
And what's your story? Who's at home with you?
Who's at home? My husband, Richard.
Right. And you've a family business?
We have, yeah. Well, it's my son that runs it now, actually. Yeah, Parquet Flooring.
Aha. And is there a big demand for that now, currently?
We're very small company. We kept going. Yeah.
Good.
Not a big demand, I wouldn't say. Not a big demand, but yes, it's still going.
So you've one son running the business, then you have three other boys and one girl all grown up. How many grandchildren have you got, Frances?
16.
Wow.
All living near us, all... You know, within a very short distance of our own house.
Oh, brilliant. So you've seen a lot of them over the last 11 months then?
Yes, oh yeah. At the moment now, only from the yard or the lawn.
Yeah, yeah. But that's sure. that's going to change. You know, the vaccine's here, and I know the next few months are going to be difficult, but come summertime and into September, then we'll see big changes, really big changes, very positive changes,
hopefully.
I think. Yeah. You're up against Sheila Scully in Old Castle and County Meath. How are you doing, Sheila?
Not too bad, Ray. How are you?
Good. You're at home doing the cleaning.
I am, as always.
Right. So you're cleaning up after the kids, is it?
I'm cleaning up after one of them. I have two eldest ones, so they don't need too much cleaning up. They do it themselves.
Right. So what have you got? How many children have you got? Oops.
I have three and a dog as well.
I hope that's the dog and not one of the kids.
No, that's the dog.
Right, okay. So one of the sons plays for Meath senior football
team. He does, Jason.
Jason Scully. Is it Jason Scully?
Jason Scully.
Right, okay. How's he getting on with lockdown and training and everything?
Not too bad. He hasn't been training in a while, but he does his own few bits and a bit of running and all that and kicking a ball against the wall. So he's doing all right. He's doing a bit.
Our quiz is a little bit of a dirty habit for you. And in the Go on, tell them what you do. Tell them what you do.
What I do?
Yes.
I clean.
No, you go down to the shed and have a smoke and listen to the quiz. Yeah. That's what you do.
Yeah, that's what you do.
It's your 4 o'clock break. I don't know if I want to be involved in that, Sheila Scully in Old Castle and County Meath. I'm sure. Sure, whatever gives you a break during these tough times. Okay, so it's 5 questions each. Okay. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie break. So Francis, say good luck to Sheila. Sheila, say good luck to Francis.
Good luck, Francis.
Good luck, Sheila.
Okay, here we go. Francis, first question. On this day in 1320, Duke Lukiatek became king of Poland. What are the two colours on the Polish flag? Red and gold or red and white?
Red and white.
Correct answer, Francis. Sheila, on this day in 1956, Maria Larsson, Swedish politician, was born in Stockholm. What are the two colours of the Swedish flag? Blue and yellow or red and yellow?
Blue and yellow.
Is the correct answer. Francis, listen to this very closely. Here we go.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the north, general of the Felix Legions. Loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius. Father to a murdered son. Husband to a murdered wife. And I will have my vengeance.
On this day in 2002, at the 59th Golden Globes, that actor won the Best Actor Award for his role in A Beautiful Mind. You heard him there in Gladiator. Can you name him?
No idea.
No. Gladiator and Beautiful Mind. Russell Crowe was the answer we were looking for, Francis. Okay.
Yes.
Sheila, have a listen to this.
I love you, Eileen.
And I love you, Christine.
No. I really love you.
Now, on this day in 1990, at the 47th Golden Globes, that actor was nominated for a Best Actor Award for his role as Christy Brown in My Left Foot. Can you name him?
Oh, God.
No. Daniel Day-Lewis. Okay. Well, at least it's even. One all. Question number 3 for you, Francis. On this day in 1961, JFK was inaugurated. We've been talking about it. As President of the United States of America, the youngest ever sworn in. But the question is, what party did he represent? Republican or Democrats?
Democrats.
It's the correct answer. Well done. And for you, Sheila, on this day in 1969, Richard M. Nixon was inaugurated as US President. Which party did he represent? Republican or Democrat?
Democrat.
No, he was Republican, Richard M. Nixon. Okay. Right. Francis, another audio one for you. Have a listen to this. So on this day back in 1971, Gary Barlow, singer with that group, was born in the UK. Can you name the group?
Oh, gosh.
Gary Barlow.
I don't think I can.
No. Will you take a guess? No.
No.
No. Take that. Take that. It's hard to believe he's 50. Gary Barlow's 50 today. Come on. God. What happened there? I know, makes you feel old, doesn't it, Sheila?
It does.
Okay. Sheila, your question. Have a listen.
I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break your walls.
So on this day in 2020, actor Liam Hemsworth and that singer divorced after a year of marriage. Can you name that singer?
Oh, God. On the tip of my tongue.
You can see the video, her and the wrecking ball.
Yeah. I can't think of it. No,
Miley Cyrus.
Oh, that's
Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter.
That's it.
She's more famous in her own right now than
being
Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter. Okay, let's see what the score is. Sheila, you're on one. Francis, you're on two. Now, Francis, if you get this correct, Sheila can't catch you. Okay, good luck with this. Here we go.
On this day
in 1921, the Republic of Turkey was declared out of the remnants of the Ottoman Empire. The question is, what is the current population of Turkey? 44 million, 64 million or 84 million? Population of Turkey.
I would guess 84 million.
You guessed 84 million, and you're right. It is 84 million. There you go.
Well done, Francis.
Thank you very much, Sheila. Very few people go for the biggest in those guesses, but you went for it, and it's right. So well done. You're on three, Sheila. You can't catch Francis.
Okay.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I don't know if I should, but I'm going to give you a mug so you can bring a cup of tea down with you to the shed to listen to the quiz. Okay.
Just as a constant
reminder of me, and you know what I'm thinking. You know what I'm thinking. Okay, Sheila. See you. Bye. Francis Dunphy. Well done.
Thank you very much.
So when all this is over, you and the hubby or a person of your choice will go up to Farnham Estate Spa and Golf Resort for a two-night break. Isn't that nice?
Lovely.
If you haven't been there before, you can go to farnhamestate.ie to see what's in store for you.
Yeah, we haven't been, no.
Great. Well, it's a lovely place.
Thank you.
Great talking to you, Francis. Mind yourself.
Thanks very much, Ray.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
There you go. Seamus Kilby has told us that Andrew Jackson, the seventh president of America, his father was Irish, so he's the most Irish, Seamus. And the most Irish president was definitely Andrew Jackson. Both of his parents were from County Antrim and his mother was already pregnant with him when they left Ireland. So he was conceived in Ireland. So there you go. That's the answer there. I suppose the question originally started up in the office, which is more Irish. Who is more Irish, JFK or Joe Biden? And yeah. OK, thanks for that. Read the anti-glare. I'm a physio who works in ergonomics and love every minute of it. Ideally, windows should be at 90 degrees to your monitor and that should prevent glare. A blind or curtain can help with this. Alternatively, you can get an anti-glare filter or hood to stick on or over your monitor to reduce glare. That's Aideline. Aideline O'Dowd. Thanks, Aideline. Blu-ray glasses can be got from Key Australia. And if that person wears glasses, they can get the anti-glare put on the lenses. If not, any optician will do non-prescription anti-glare ones, says Anne in Dublin 22. And you can get anti-glare film put on your glasses at the opticians and some is covered with PPS. Does that mean it's prescription? You can get it free, is it? No. Your PPS numbers. Okay. So there you go. 51551RateRT.ie. Soup of the day after this. R.E.M., Man on the Moon. And Joe Biden is just coming out into the steps of the Capitol Hill building where he will be inaugurated and deliver his inaugural speech. Rapturous applause. Three former presidents at the inauguration. Barack Obama, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. And of course, Donald Trump decided he wouldn't be there. His last two fingers to establishment, I suppose you could call it. Ocean blue, we're told, is the colour of Jill Biden's outfit. And it says here that her ocean blue wool coat dress and matching silk face mask were created by emerging American designer Alexandra O'Neill, founder of the label Markarian. With her outfit choice, Biden seems to be following in the tradition of other first ladies who've championed lesser known designers. That's what I'm getting there now. Miserable day outside here in Dublin. I think it's miserable all over the country. We have the warm, tasty answer to cheer things up on this dreary January Wednesday. It begins with S and ends in P, and OU in the middle. Yes, it's soup. Soup of the daytime. And today's recipe is brought to you courtesy of the gentlemen from Currabinny, James Kavanagh and William Murray. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too.
Yes. James, are you watching the inauguration?
I am. It's on silent here in front of me. And yes, it is ocean blue. It's fab.
Are you good on your colours? I'm not great on colours now, I have to admit.
Is ocean blue your own words, or was that in the press release?
It was in the press release.
Okay. Good words. Nice descriptive words.
No, I put on a different voice when I'm reading from a press release. Did you not notice that? I would never like people to think that I'm claiming those words myself. That'd be robbery. So I don't do that sort of thing. Okay. So you've accepted our challenge. Thanks very much, James and William. You're stuck at home, so you're in different rooms now on different phones, which is great. How is the whole lockdown thing happening? Working out for you, James?
Grand, yeah. Like we are in a kind of position where, like, I never really had an office to begin with, so I haven't noticed that, you know, that much of a change. I work from home. We both shoot food from a desk in our sitting room. So anything we do, really, we've been kind of doing normally anyway. Right. So the house is like a food factory at the moment. We're doing a lot of we write for the Examiner once a week as well. So we're doing a lot of shoots and stuff at home. So we're keeping busy, yeah. Eating loads and keeping busy.
Yeah. And William, how's it going for you? Are you working on a new book as well as writing the weekly thing?
I'm not working on a new book, but I've been doing my articles now for almost 2 years now, I think. And it feels like I've written several books. And I'm sure I have several books worth of recipes written at this stage. But it's actually been a nice way to do it, because it's less cramming trying to get loads of recipes together, you know, for a certain deadline, and just kind of like taking each week as it comes. But I have an art studio within my 5 kilometers as well that I can escape to. So at least I don't get too, you know,
I'm
running away from me.
Running, yeah, exactly. I wasn't going to say, but yeah.
I'm interested in the process when you do a recipe for the first time and you cook it and then you have to take a picture of it. Does it happen that a lot of them might go in the bin? You know, if you're not happy with the first result.
I wouldn't consider myself a food photographer. I know that there's loads of tricks and things they do, and I remember from shooting the book. You know, there's a lot of uncooked food that goes on because it you know, it looks better in a photograph or whatever. But right. I mean, I try not to do that. I just shoot them in the nicest way I can. But we definitely don't put the food to waste between me, James, our photographer Bree, and whoever else. She hasn't been able to be here recently. But you know, traditionally, between the three of us and our housemate Anna, we get a lot of the food.
You manage to eat them, yeah. And James, are you into soup?
I love a soup. I love a soup. I love that you're doing this section as well. I think it's brilliant. And especially, this is the most grim week I think we've had. Like, the weather is just rotten. Yeah. So it's a day for the ducks and a day for soup, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, we've gone with a really nice broth.
Oh, you see, that you don't get enough broths. I love a broth myself, yes.
You don't. And I've ranted about this before. Any soup you usually go, any place, when you go for soup when you're out, it's usually a creamy one or a thick one or, you know, a minestrone or something. You rarely get a good broth, and they're easy to make, but they're stunning. I love them. So light.
They're a little bit more involved though, aren't they? Because, you know, with a thick soup or creamy soup, you just throw everything in and then you blitz it. And, you know,
they are. Do you know what though? You have to have good stock. You have to have really good stock to begin with. Right. Really well made stock. If you're making a roast chicken at home, save the carcass, save the bits of vegetables, and make your own stock. And you can freeze it in ice cube trays as well, which is brilliant. So, if you have a good stock, honestly, a broth is really easy to make from going from there.
Okay, William. So it's a leek broth.
Yeah. So we're sort of looking slightly ahead. We're almost getting into, even though the weather wouldn't suggest it, we're almost getting to springtime and sort of looking ahead into like what vegetables are coming up in spring. And, you know, you've got leeks, and you've got a couple of winter vegetables still left over, like carrots and things like that. So we're sort of taking those elements and making a nice fresh and springtime soup but still very comforting. We're sort of coming out of that, you know, we're probably all sick of all the stodgy, heavy food from Christmas and winter time. So something a little bit sort of brighter and lighter and fresher.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see here, which is controversial, because we read out an email at the start of the show about a soup disaster where they'd thrown in all the leftover vegetables, etc. But one of the lads in the house had lemon chicken, and they forgot to take the quarter lemons out of the mixture. They blitzed it, and then they had this citrus soup. I see there's zest of half a lemon in your recipe, James.
Yeah, I'm into like the hint of lemon. I think as a flavor or as a sort of an enhancer flavor, it does a lot of work that isn't necessarily what you'd expect. I think it brightens things and it brings other flavors out, and it doesn't necessarily taste, you know, it's not going to taste like lemon soup.
Yeah.
It'll just enhance, like the way salt enhances flavors. Lemon juice does a similar thing. It brightens and it lifts flavors.
Okay. Also, it sounds like that guy blitzed the whole lemon, the pit, which wouldn't be a good idea. So, but the zest is, as William said, just an enhancer, and it brings out the other flavors really well, as a seasoning, salt and pepper does. So don't blitz a whole lemon, just the zest.
Just the zest. And at the end of this, you will be able to see your leeks and your carrots and your celery and your spring onions, and they'll all be visible in your broth. Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Why is it that people prefer the other type? Because very, very few people I know like a broth. They prefer the blitzed soup.
I think it's because it's not very readily available. I think the soups we're brought up on, and the general vegetable soup that's served in a pub or whatever, it tends to be on the kind of on the either creamy side or on the blitzed side.
Yeah.
But a really well made broth, like a, you know, even a consommé, or it can be such a gorgeous thing to have, and it can really, you end up really tasting the actual vegetables in it. It's like bisque as well, is I think my favourite type soup. Lobster bisque is stunning.
Look at you, lobster bisque.
Far from lobster, I was red. But I do love it as a treat. But broth now, I would, if any restaurant people are listening, please put broths on your menu.
Yes, bring back the broth. Bring back the
broth. Yes. Make broths great again.
Build back better. Broth back better. Listen, I was watching last week's episode of Operation Transformation on the RTE player this morning, and who popped up in the middle of it but yourself and a Derry girl.
Oh, yeah. For the Denny ad.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good crack. I was really nervous meeting her because, you know, I went to the shoot, and her character in Derry Girls is quite frightening. So she kind of bullies a James in Derry Girls as well. So, but it was really good fun to make, and she's great crack.
Yeah, yeah. And you were playing the sort of prima donna, sort of.
I wasn't playing someone too far from who I actually am. I didn't have to do a lot of work, to be honest.
You were typecast, is that what you're saying? Jamie Lee?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I remember I was talking to the guy, the director, and he was like, yeah, we kind of just wrote it the way you are. So I was like, what does this say about me? But I'm playing a bit of a diva who bosses Jamie around to make me a nice Denny meat-free sandwich.
Right, there you go. Okay, so we're going to put the spring leek soup or stroke broth recipe up online, and thanks so much to you both for helping us out with that, and mind yourselves down there, and hopefully when we get to the other side of this, you'll come in and cook up a storm and we'll have a chat or whatever.
We'd love to.
Is there another book in the offing or not? Or
yeah, our column at the moment centres around it's three recipes every week in the Examiner, and it's around one ingredient three ways.
Uh-huh.
So I think we would like to explore something like that. So, you know, taking a carrot and turning it into three different recipes, or taking one piece of, you know, whatever.
Yes, I think
it would be a nice kind of theme.
Okay. Right, James Kavanagh, William Murray, thanks very much. And the Currabinnie Cookbook is still out there and available online, I would imagine. That's it from us. Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara are on the way with more coverage of the inauguration of the 46th President of the United States of America, Joe Biden. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.